now alcoholic. And good to be here with you this evening. For me, I can't think of a better place for me to be but in an AA meeting. I am a conservative member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am not a voice of AA. So if I say something, there's always a conversation on the other side of it. And whatever I say, there's not a period at the end of it. And I have found that the way that I apply AA is right for me, but I don't lose any sleep over how somebody else does it here, I assure you. So I believe, for me, that I was born irritable, restless, and discontent from an early age. And when I look back through being in AA since May 5th, 1987, I assume I was dominated by fear for a big part of my life. Okay, but I would not have known that until I came here. And at age 13, I got a bottle of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill, and I chugged the whole thing down. And rather quickly, and I got set free somewhere in that. Something happened that was absolutely remarkable. That sensation that would later become elusive was just absolutely fantastic. And I got sick after that. I drank too fast, too quick. I got in trouble. I had consequences almost immediately. We like to say in AA, there's three phases to our alcoholism. The first one's fun. The second one is fun with problems. And the last one is problems. My fun only lasted, and then it was fun with problems. Now, being a young kid at 13 years old, I didn't become a daily drinker. I don't remember the next time I drank after that. Could have been a month, could have been 2 months. I have no recollection. Since I was a post-child of the hippie generation, there was other things involved, non-habit forming, marijuana as growing up, microdots, all sorts of stuff. But I always washed it down with alcohol. And I didn't know I was in the grips of a progressive illness that would always get worse, never better. I thought I was having a good time, fun, and I was chasing excitement. And by the time I was 16 years old, I had to go see a school psychologist because I was having problems, and the problem was I was ready to flunk out from school. And they diagnosed me with a lack of self-esteem and a lack of self-confidence, blah, 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 blah. And what I realized later on in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I had been misdiagnosed by good people that meant well for me, but I didn't suffer from an emotional illness, and I didn't suffer from a self-esteem problem. I suffered from a spiritual illness. And AA would reveal that to me. And so by 1978, I got my feet back on the ground. I got some help. My father sent me away for a while. I came back, got some help, got a GED. I was in my first year of college. And I got two drunk driving charges in a row. They were about 4 or 5 months apart. And the first time I went to Calvert County, and this was in Maryland, I went to the ASAP. And the ASAP back then in Calvert County was run by AA members. Everybody in there was an AA member. And the first time that I went there, they just kind of chalked it up. As this was a young kid out of, you know, in college, you know, he got drunk, got a DUI. We don't think you're an alcoholic. Stay out of trouble. You won't see us again. Okay? Well, the second time I came in there, started handing me out the pamphlets. Now, when you start getting pamphlets, you're in trouble, okay? I got the pamphlets. I got the big book given to me. I got the lecture on meetings. I got all of it. And they zoomed in on me. And thank God that back then that was over quickly. I always say we ruined it for everybody else because you could get multiple DUIs back then, pay about $300, get a slap on the wrist, an advantage from your record. So I had five drunk driving charges. You wouldn't find them anywhere. We ruined it for everybody. Nowadays, they say it's $7,000 to $10,000. I could not imagine. Got to take a pee test and all that. I would have flunked. Okay? In 1978, there was a shift in my life. I was in college. Somebody gave me some stuff, blotter to drop. I washed it down with a six-pack, and I got off on Jerry Garcia's guitar, and I became a gypsy deadhead after that. I mean, I'm a real alcoholic. It didn't take me long. I found what I wanted. I fell in love with them. I immersed myself in that environment, and at the same time, I saw Cheech and Chong up in smoke. And if you haven't seen that, when you think that this is what this guy wanted to become, that's a delusional reality. I mean, come on now. But I did. I really locked in to Cheech and Chong up in smoke. I thought that this was, yeah. Delusional, right? God, I was in a delusional, right? Didn't even know it. Trying to have fun, trying to get excitement, trying to have a good time, you know. I was headed for trouble, and I didn't even know it. And slowly but surely, it creeped up with me. You know, another arrest, another DUI, flunked out of college twice. Just problem after problem after problem. And I could stop drinking on my own, but I couldn't stay stopped. That's the problem. I have an obsession of the mind. I could stop, you know. And I tell you what stopped me a lot was the fear of the consequence that I was in. And when the fear wore off of the consequence, I got back to drinking again. I couldn't have told you that until I sat in AA for a long time to tell you it was the fear of the consequences that sobered me up. Because when I was in here, I was going to do good. You know, I sat in an AA meeting and got 5 drunk driving charges now. My parents don't want me on the property. I'm going to sober up for a while. And I did. And then I drank again. And when I drink, there's something in my body. It's an abnormal reaction, or it's a physical allergy of the body, that I overserve myself. You know, in AA, we say it very simply that one drink's too many and 1,000's not enough. And that's what we're talking about is once I popped the top, it led to 1, to 2, to 3, to 4, you know, till I passed out or I was put in jail. And that's how it was. But in the delusional reality, I can't see the truth of the situation because that sensation is so elusive. It's so powerful. It draws me back even though I'm in a lot of hot water. And it doesn't make any sense to anybody around me. None. No sense at all. Why would he? As the book says, what was he thinking? Delusional reality. The insanity of that first drink. I didn't know it. And the fear would step in on the consequence, sobered me up for a little while, and then I got back to it when the fear wore off and the consequence diminished. Consequences bring you to Alcoholics Anonymous, but they don't keep you here. They just don't keep you in your chair. And the other problem that I have that AA would expose, I have an obsession of the mind, a physical allergy of the body, is I'm irritable, restless, and discontent because I have a spiritual dis-ease or a spiritual malady. And dis-ease meant, dis means separate from ease. And when I would drink, the dis would disappear and I'd get some ease. Sometimes it'd be 10 minutes. Early on, it was hours. Put some other stuff in me, I might get 6 or 7 hours. I'd get looped up. I was burned out from it. I couldn't get enough of it. And I knew better, you know. I looked at my life and I started to see later on that I was unsuccessful in life. And, you know, I had success in my family and I knew it and I just couldn't. You know, that obsession is paralyzing and that insanity is delusional. I'm telling you. That's why I'm powerless over alcohol. And so on May 4th, 1987, I had a job. I didn't have any money in the bank. I was about $28,000 in debt from bad debt. Wasn't allowed on the property of my parents. 11 arrests. And it didn't look real good. So I decided I would go to AA after somebody kind of, my boss told me that he wanted me to either get sober or quit. I went here. I had no intentions, probably, to long-term sobriety, and I've been here ever since. And so I started going to meetings, and Went to meetings, had some sponsors. They were good people. I went to meetings. I took the steps off the wall. I had an off-the-wall program. It worked just fine for me at that time. I was here for about 18 months going to maybe a meeting on a daily basis, I would say, or close to that. I have no proof of that anymore because my brain, I don't. But I went to a lot of meetings. I know that I was in meetings all the time. I had, up to that point of 18 months, I had seen three therapists for different emotional problems. I had a bunch of self-help books. And I had speakers in AA that validated that were talking the same stuff. And at 18 months of sobriety, somebody gave me a set of Joe and Charlie from Akron, and I listened to it in my car because I'd been listening to speakers. And something happened. There was a shift in me. There was a transformation within those tapes. And I was down in Florida at Celebrating Sobriety Number 1, and I met my sponsor down there, Bob. He was a taper. And what happened to me right about the area of 18 months, somewhere in there, I bumped into the AA fanatics. Okay? They were different than what I had been exposed to. And I'd been to meetings all over Virginia pretty much. And that conversation wasn't happening. It wasn't happening. And all of a sudden, there's this conversation that I was unaware of. And I ended up going to Joe and Charlie in December of 1989 and seeing them in Containing, Pennsylvania Fire Hall. And everything in my sobriety changed after I heard them. And within a period of time, I went home and I took all the self-help books and all those tapes and I pushed them in the trash can where, for me, they belonged. And what the AA fanatics told me is that you cannot help yourself, that AA is not a self-help program. This is not about loving yourself. This isn't even about forgiving yourself. It all started with self. This isn't about self-esteem. This isn't about any of the self-help stuff. This is about God help and help others. That you will find within the book Alcoholics Anonymous that our real purpose is to fit ourselves of maximum service to God and those about us. That we have not given the power to help ourselves, we've been given the power to help others through the 12-step experience. I'd never heard this conversation. I'm floored. And all of a sudden, I have guys around me like Johnny from Long Beach, California. And this guy's bigger than life to me. And we're bringing him over from California to do steps and everything. And all of a sudden, we got Joe and Charlie. And they're talking to me on the phone. I'm going down to Arkansas. All of a sudden, I got Clancy. And Clancy's in this. And he's talking about being active and a structure and commitments to the group and showing up early and staying and putting down your cell phones and not doing this and not doing that and blah, blah, blah. I never had the conversation. I'm in this phenomenal change and I don't even know it. These fanatics are surrounding me. And then there's Sandy up in D.C. And then there's, you know, Ray down in Florida. And then there's, you know, they're just adding on and they're beating the same drum. And I'm like, wow. And I'm starting to really change now in AA, where before I was just, you know, I wasn't drinking. I was going to meetings, which was fine. It was fine. That's what I was getting. And all of a sudden, I'm in this process. And Joe and Charlie are bringing out this idea that the big book has directions to the steps, the specific directions. It's not ambiguous and it's not interpretation. They're specific directions. It had never been said in Alcoholics Anonymous before. They're the ones that started the big book revolution. Any fellowship or any movement, Back to Basics, Fellowship of the Spirit, or anything after that, came after Joe and Charlie because they brought the big book back in and they brought the package of the directions. Anybody today doing the big book seminars or anybody today really into the book, it all influenced from there. And it happened in 1980. And I have a set of the tapes from 1980 that my sponsor, Bob, he was sponsored by Wesley Parris, so he got one of the sets of tapes from the 1980 International Convention in New Orleans, Wesley Parrish sent this out to the AA members and the delegates that he knew, and I've got the little thing that he wrote from the Holiday Inn. He said, these tapes are worth $1 million. And they were. They were. And all of a sudden, there's directions to the steps. It's not ambiguous anymore. I'm starting to realize this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous and the step process. Where before, it was ambiguous to me. I never heard the conversation in an AA meeting. Like I said, as far as I know, I went to one on a daily basis. I was from Baltimore to Philadelphia to Orange to everywhere, and I never heard the conversation. And now all of a sudden, here's the conversation. And that process is changing me. And I say things here that are controversial, and they're for me. Again, I don't lose any sleep, but I found something as important, if not more important, than gratitude. Okay? And what that is, that's enthusiasm for this gift called Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? My grand sponsor, and I will share this with you, one time I asked him about gratitude, and he said, that's the biggest lie we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, Al. We're really talking about being thankful. Gratitude is about giving. And I was like, I was floored. I was floored by that. But again, the AA fanatics pierced my old ideas. They got me to think about something that wasn't common in AA, and I needed that thought process. And so my sponsor, Bob, he said, he gave me the gift of the AA convention. He said, this is a gift in your life. He said, there's only a certain amount that you can get out of the local meetings, no matter how good they are. You got to step out and you got to listen to another speaker, and things will shift and change in you. You'll be able to come back and give that into the fellowship in your community. So the meetings will no longer be a place that you get something. They'll start to be a place that you give something. And I've never, that train of thought wasn't in there. And so Bob said, I want you to start a convention. We started Pockets of Enthusiasm in Virginia Beach in 1994. And I brought in all these guys. I brought Joe and Charlie to Richmond. I brought Johnny. I brought Clancy. I brought Ray. I just name them. Blah, 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 blah. Tom was there all the time. And we were down there on the beach, and we were having a good time. And Pockets of Enthusiasm, it was a pocket of enthusiasm. And the name of that came from a talk that Clancy gave in 1984 in Bellevue, Nebraska. And he coined he coined it Pockets of Enthusiasm, that we have enthusiastic AA. We have centers in groups that people are bubbly and happy, and they're active, and they're on fire. And then we have gray Alcoholics Anonymous. Hey, still going to meetings there, John? Yeah, I'm coming once a year to get my chip. And Clancy would say, that's the gray hole. And I would listen to that as a young kid here, and I go, wow, that's the gray hole? I've sat in it. And he said, yeah, and there's this bubbly, incredibly enthusiastic, sponsorship-led groups that it's a whole different, and that's what I was finding. It was a whole different ballgame. It was enthusiastic. You know, and we don't have to be brilliant with our message or even verbal, but if we're enthusiastic, we can attract people. Yeah. Rather than, hey, when's the last time you've been to a meeting? Well, I've been busy lately. It's been about 3 weeks. That's fine. One of my good friends down in Buckingham that I love as much as a grandfather, he quit going. You know, he's got about, I think, 26 years. He quit 13 years ago. He hadn't drank. He told me he's not going to drink again. I talked to him at least once a month. It used to be every week. But I can tell you one thing in our conversation, there's no enthusiasm for this miracle called Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you one thing. There's no talk of sponsorship, steps, working with others, God, letting go and letting God. There's none of it. And I love him as much as any human being. I'm very close to him. I don't give him any AA pitch. You know, I just listen. I'm his friend, you know. But his wife, several years ago, came to me and said, I need to share something with you. I said, that's fine. I'm a friend of the family, she said, you know, when he had his heart attack in the garden. He called in the house for the rescue squad on his cell phone. He called me. I picked it up. He said, call the rescue squad now. And I hung up and I put the phone back down and I wondered if I really wanted to call the rescue squad. So dryity can be lethal. Okay, not just for the person that's suffering, but the ones that are around it. Okay. So I'm cranking along here. I had a lot of financial amends to make. Like I said, $28,000 in debt. I think, I don't remember the years yet, but I think it was somewhere about 10 years of sobriety, maybe a little bit more. I paid it all off. And at about 7 years of sobriety before that happened, my boss came to me, who was independently wealthy off of real estate, and he said, I understand you're doing a pretty good job. You're sober. You're paying debts. I'd ask his friend to help me. He was also a millionaire because I was so bad with money. I had to get sober with money is what I had to do. And I wasn't sober with money for at least 4 years here while I was in out. While I was here, I just wasn't sober with money yet. And I had asked somebody for help. He wasn't a member of AA, but he helped me to discipline and budget and all this kind of things that was unfamiliar to me. So at 7 years, my boss comes up. They were partners together in a business. And he goes, let's go down to the bank and let's make this one check so you don't have to pay out 12 or whatever. It's paying out a month little by little. And we walked in. He said, the bank president put $7,000 into his bank account. I'll co-sign it. You can take a CD, take $7,000, keep it for a year, whatever, he said. And he turned to me and he said, are you good for this if I sign it? And I said, yes, sir. And I had that paid off in about 3 years. And I was out. And I never got back in it, thank God. You know, I'm 32 years sober and haven't had to go back to that. And so I got out of that. I ended up, the guy that semi-fired me, became my business partner with another guy that was involved in that conference about getting rid of me for drinking. We ended up owning a business together. Things are flying high. We're rolling. Alcoholics Anonymous is looking good on the horizon. This is a storybook, you know, to take the guy that's in the debt and he's in the bucket at work, and all of a sudden he's a business partner with the guys that had the talk, and everything's paid off, and now he has a home, he has all these acres in Buckingham, you know, he has cars in the garage, and it looks good. It's a great thing to share. Okay, I am not a fan of if you're not happy, you're not doing it right. I am not a fan of that at all. I don't know where that comes from. There's adversity in life, okay? Life comes to visit, like we like to say in Buckingham, it's not all rainbows and unicorns, okay? And so things are going pretty good, and then they turn south, okay? And I'm going home every day with these partners, and I'm going home every night with a resentment for almost 2.5 years, okay? All right. And I've got a lot of fear because financially I'm being threatened. I was making good money and now all of a sudden, because of business decisions, it looks like, and, you know, I'm threatened. And I got very unhappy. Now, I made a decision at 15 years of sobriety. I was in Northern Virginia in a meeting and a guy said that he had gone from two meetings a week, which I wasn't doing. I was doing more than two meetings a week. And for the last 2 years, he had made a meeting on a daily basis. He said, everything changed in my life. He said, this is where I want to be. He said, I like going to a meeting on a daily basis. So from 15 years to right now, I've almost made a meeting on a daily basis after I heard that guy talk. And at that time, I was making a meeting on a daily basis, and those resentments and those fears. And I would go to meetings sometimes, and I didn't even hear you for the first 30, 40 minutes sometimes. I'm just too clogged up with self. And then I heard you. I snapped out of it. 15 minutes maybe. A little bit after the meeting, snap back in it. Go to the meeting, first 15, 20 minutes, can't hear you, snapped out of it. during the end of the meeting, snap back in it. Snap in, snap out, blah, 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 blah. I resigned early in life at 58 years old. I was able to do that. And I was very unhappy about that. And all of a sudden, I'm sucked into a black hole. You know, I'm having domestic problems. I'm having business problems. The business isn't there anymore. The new guys that are coming in that are the new partners that I all handpicked, they're all against me now. Everybody, you know, blah, blah. Everybody's at each other's throats. Not a happy place to be. And I got extremely burned out. I didn't know that till I came out of it. And I used to say that you'd have to be weak to get burned out. Because I was in a profession that there's a high burnout in it. And I never burned out in it. And I would say, that person's weak. That's what I'd say. I would judge another person. And when you get taken down a couple notches, I tell you what happens. Judgment gets taken down a couple notches too. Okay? You're not judging people anymore. And I was so incredibly burned out and not knowing it, I went into the black hole for about 12 to 14 months. Not a good place to be. You get a case of the crazies in the head all the time. I'm going to meetings on a daily basis, sometimes too. Because the newcomers, the old-timers, the AA fanatics said to me that when there are tough times, you double up on the meetings. Let's see if this thing works. I would think that it's not working because I'm going to a lot of meetings and I'm sinking. I'm praying the best I can when I can get unclogged. I'm calling my sponsor. I'm trying to help out other people. I had one guy, I love telling this story. I had one guy come to my house. He's doing a fist step. Okay? And he's sharing this stuff. And after he finished, I just dropped all my stuff in. He got a new sponsor 3 weeks later. Never came back to my house, but God, did he help me that day. I just dropped all that stuff in there. He was like, this guy's 28 years sober. And oh, I don't. I was doing anything to stay up for air. You know, I went to meetings and shared the stuff. And you know what? In our big, beautiful, loving fellowship, people judged me. I know that. I know that now. That's okay. It's just the way it is. I had to. I had to go ahead and share that, blah, get it out of me. And that black hole is brutal. I'll tell you what, boy, I hope I never have to go in there. I stopped talking to God for about 10 days. I got mad. I didn't think he caused my problems because I really believe what the book said. I made decisions based on self to put me in that position. I do believe that. But I thought God should bring me relief a lot quicker. Okay? I wasn't getting relief. I was getting unrelief. Okay? I have a spiritual dis-ease. Okay? I am very much diseased. Okay? And I stopped talking to God for 10 days. I got so mad. And God had been with me most of my life, even before Alcoholics Anonymous. I stopped talking. And at 10 days, I put up the truce flag. I said, okay. I said, I'm going to let go and let God. God, you know I love you. I know you love me. I believe that. I'm not doing real well here at all. And I'm just going to let go and let God. I don't know what that means. I don't know what it looks like. I know it's in the actions of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what I'm going to do on a daily basis. And so I put a black thing on my that says let go and let God. That's what it put on me. So every day I would look at that and say, let go and let God, let go and let God, let go and let God. Get to a meet and call the sponsor, help out some, let go and let God. And I came out of it. The lights came back on. The AA fanatics were right. They were right. This is what they lived and breathed in. And I was sitting there doubting it. You know, I'm not going to come through this. Maybe I've got to go check myself into an institution, man, because I'm not doing good. But the AA fanatics were right. And one of the gifts they gave me the gift of the resentment inventory. And I'm a 10, 11, and 12 guy, so I just take all that stuff and I move it into 10, 11, and 12. Okay? And they said, what are you doing about your resentments? Because they were thick and deep towards a lot of people, okay? Because once you get one towards like the partners, then you get them towards the new partners, then you get them towards the wife, then you get them towards nobody's behaving anymore. Okay? Because one resentment adds to another, to another, to another. It's almost like the drink. There's a physical craving for resentment, and it stuck on me. So I talked to my friend, an AA fanatic, and he said that, are you praying for other people? And I said, no. And he said, that's good. He said, because that came out of a story in the back of the book from a magazine article. That is not our directions. Our directions are in the big book. And he said, let's follow them. I said, okay. So they, like ourselves, were sick too. It's equal. I'm not praying for somebody from an elevated ego. I am now understanding that we're both sick. I'm asking God to help me out emotionally and give me these things that I can't come up with for myself. And I'm asking God to save me from being angry or to remove this anger. And then I'm avoiding retaliation and argument. I'll tell you what, that saved my life at work with my partners. If I said half the things that I wanted to say to them, we wouldn't be friends today. If I did one thing right in that black hole, is I kept my mouth shut and I didn't say the things I wanted to say to the people and straighten them out. I avoided retaliation argument. And I asked God to remove that anger on a daily basis. I asked God on a daily basis to remove that fear. And you know what happened? I got free of it. And I had to go back to the partners and I made amends to them. And today, you know what? We're friends. We're friends. Okay? That's because this thing is bigger than me. And Bill Wilson, what's interesting with the 12 and 12, that Bill, through divine guidance and God's thumbprint is in this book, gave us a set of directions that will transform and change our life, even if we do it imperfectly. In the 12 and 12, he added depth to it. And what's interesting, that in that copyright, I believe, of 1952, you'd have to check that on me. So from 35, 52, I think we got 17 years in there. AA now at 1945, I think that they had 26,000 members. I don't know in 52, so they're over 30. Maybe they're close to 40. I'm not sure. He noticed that people that had longer-term sobriety were having problems in sobriety, and he started documenting that in those steps in 12 and 12. Okay? He talked about justifiable anger. He talked about silent scorn. He talked about justifying things. He talked about character defects. He talked about all this kind of stuff. And as I read these books, I started saying, I'm guilty, I'm guilty, I'm guilty, I'm guilty, I'm guilty. Okay? No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect innocence. These principles, we're not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. Am I willing to grow along spiritual lines? Yes. Is my life perfect? Never has been. Will it be? No. Okay. Do I have things in my life that are manageable? Yeah. Financially, I'm manageable. I could name off these things. Okay. There's always something in there lurking. Okay. And so for me, I have to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have to do this thing as though my life depends on it. At 32 years of sobriety, I got to tell you, I'm still excited about going to meetings. I'm still excited about reading our literature. I'm still excited about this thing. I still have enthusiasm. I haven't lost it. It's not on the back burner. And I think why that is, because when the AA fanatics got in my head, they said, this thing must be first in your life no matter what. Doesn't make other things... We're not supposed to make other things unimportant. This is just the thing that wins out. Okay? So, what my grand sponsor always said was that if you're tired and busy, which are always good reasons not to come to a meeting, come to the meeting. We're all tired and busy tonight. Okay? Hey, I've got kids. I can't go to the meetings like I used to. I've got a kid. I still make 7 meetings a week. He has to sit in some of them, unfortunately. I've got a job. I'm making money. I can't make meetings. I made a job. I owned 2 businesses that were full-time. I still made a meeting every day. So AA's logic or truth is, what stopped you from drinking? Nothing. What stopped you coming to the meeting? I'm tired. I'm busy. I have other things. Okay? I'll tell you one thing. What shifts in a meeting, and I have already shared this, that really made it for me, when it stopped being an opportunity to get something and started being an opportunity to give something, the meeting changed its whole personality for me. You know, and so when I went into a meeting to give something, I always got something. So one thing in the 12 and 12 that Bill Wilson really got on to, that I really liked this terminology, this language that he used, is he talked about a self-determined objective versus a God-determined objective. Okay? So when you hear that I'm trying to love myself, that's a self-determined objective. That's self-help. I want to forgive myself, but I can't. Well, the literature says, why don't you start by forgiving other people? Okay. Trying to forgive myself is also a trap of self-obsession. It gets me stuck. I don't have enough self-esteem, so I have to do esteemable acts. Where did that come from? We learn to do spiritual things here. We learn to give to other people. We learn to give to our group. We learn to give back into society. Okay. So all these self-determined objectives that look like they're the thing that I need to feel good. And I liked this guy yesterday. He's fairly new. He's from D.C. He said, I'm glad they came to this meeting, and I heard from me that I'm always beating the drum. Forget if you're not happy, you're not doing it right. Forget that. He said, I'm glad you said that, because I think most of the time when I'm up and down in sobriety, I'm not doing AA right. So I was there for him. He was there for me. Okay, that's very important. So self-determined objective starts to get erased here. Okay, so what is the promises? Look at the promises in the big book. Okay, look at the promises of steps 9, 10, 11, and 12. Look at these promises. Just take a peek at them tonight if you haven't for a while. Tell me that's not good stuff. All right? So we lose interest in selfish things. Self-determined objective, me, trying to get something to feel better, which I've always done. And I start to get a God-determined objective, which is to fit myself of maximum service to God knows about me, which I'm not perfect at. Don't give me a grade on it. I just believe in it. I'm enthusiastic about it. I think it's a good direction for life. I really do. Okay? Look at these promises. Okay? We're in less danger of fear, excitement, worry, depression, self-pity. Wow. Wow. We suddenly realize that God can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. There it is. You can't do it for yourself because it's not self-help. It's God help. And then to give back because we've been given the power to help others, not ourselves. God, when the fanatics got in my head with that and changed me, I've taken that to the bank. And then in the 12th step, it says, when other activities fail, nothing so much will ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. This works when other activities fail. Okay? If you're not going to enough meetings, you can't be intensive working. Okay? It says this is the bright spot for us. Look at that. You're looking for self-determined. We get a bright spot. Don't you want a bright spot? I want a bright spot. I like a bright spot. I was in the dark hole. I don't want a dark spot. I want a bright spot. It says this is an experience you must not miss. We know you don't want to miss it. People miss it all the time. You know? And then look at the ultimate promise and a vision for you. It talks about the fellowship, that we find a substitute that's vastly more than that from the drinking. It's in the fellowship. It says, here we find relief from care, boredom, and worry. Our imaginations are fired. Okay? Find relief from care, boredom, and worry, irritable, restless, discontent. Find relief from it? I hadn't found permanent relief. I'm free from alcohol. I woke up free, going to go to bed free, but I'm not free from self yet. Well, I have my moments, but I'm not totally free. I've never been totally free of resentment or fear. Don't have one right now, but it could pop up. Okay? But I know what to do about it today. So I'll leave you with this note. I don't know what time it is. Probably going to cut out a little early here. I've said what I needed to say. I've shared it. I'm finished. I don't want to keep going on, but I like to close this way. That God in his divine wisdom, and he is all power. You know, remember what it says, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Then we leave it. We never do the whole thing. Remember that alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there's one who has all power. That's God. May you find him now. There's the power of the paragraph. Just not remember that you're alcoholic, cunning, baffling, powerful. It's too much for us. There's some folks here tonight that we probably all loved in our community, everywhere that aren't in here tonight. They fell victim to the delusion. The insanity got them again. Okay? So God in his infinite wisdom could have given this message to our friends in the medical department. But he didn't. He let him help us. Look at Silkworth. Look at the doctor's opinion. Look at it. What an incredible. Really, it's two essays. It's incredible. He was one of our great friends. He helped us all the way through his life. But he didn't give it to him. He could have given this to our friends in the psychological department, but he didn't. Because this isn't a psychological illness. I don't respond to moral psychology. A doctor opinion says this. Okay? But he didn't. But he allowed Carl Jung, who gave the gift of the spiritual experience to Roland, the transformation of self came from him, but he didn't give him. In fact, Carl Jung said, I misdiagnosed you, Roland. I thought you had an emotional illness. You don't. You have a spiritual illness. I don't know what to do with it. I know that it happens. I'll explain it to you, this upheaval. I'll explain it to you. You got to go sit in the environment. I can't. He could have given to our friends in religion. God, have they helped us. We couldn't meet here if we didn't. Now, I'm not an advocate of putting down anybody's religion or belief system. It's theirs. But he didn't. He gave this gift to alcoholics. And our friends in religion, if you look at the Oxford group and you study the history at all, their thumbprint is in Alcoholics Anonymous. We just evolved. Okay? Their thumbprint's in here. But he didn't give it. And a couple months ago, Billy and Allison and Lynn, we were all up in Cleveland, and we went to Dr. Bob's house. Should have been there years ago. I had a very emotional experience in there. Incredible. You know, they brought us in with a historian. They explained it, you know. It's a small house, really. And they brought all these drunks in there. That's all they did. And they learned the gift that one alcoholic helping another alcoholic, that we have something that the non-alcoholic doesn't have, is that we have experience with drinking and not drinking, and we can help that alcoholic to recover from alcoholism through the 12 steps and the fellowship experience with a sponsor because of our experience. And Dr. Bob's house and his living room, they didn't know what they had yet. They made that very clear, okay? That after he got drunk in Atlantic City, he was in the same bedroom with Bill Wilson that night. He popped up in the middle of the night and he says, I want to go through it, Bill. And Bill said, want to go through with what? What you told me. And the next day, they didn't wait. They started working with other alcoholics. And when you look at that small house on that street and what it did for the world of Alcoholics Anonymous, it is absolutely emotional and mind-boggling. So there is one who has all power. That is for sure. That is God. How you interpret it, that's the great thing of AA. You choose your own conception, your own interpretation. And may you find him now. Yeah. What a beauty. And you know what I find in every meeting that I go to? That's what I find. I just love the fellowship. And I take the steps and I have a sponsor. And I'm glad you guys were here tonight.
Thank you, Alfred.